Sonny has reminded us, we discussed why it was that Moses cut no ice among those for whom God called him. And just briefly to refresh your mind, the answers were very simple. He wore the wrong clothes. He was dressed like an Egyptian. That's why he was so conscious when he went down, though motivated by a sincere sense of compassion for his own kith and kin. He was a misfit. He was out of place. He looked this way and he looked that way. He was preoccupied with what people might think. Seeing one of his own kith and kin suffer wrong, he defended him, avenged him that was oppressed, and smote the Egyptian. For he supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would deliver them. But they understood not. He cut no ice. None whatever. In so many words, what they said to him, it was this: if God by your hand is going to deliver us, then why do you still strut around dressed like the Egyptians who oppress us? Get back to where you belong. That's why I cut no ice. Had the wrong clothes. You see, he was self-conscious, a misfit. He felt out of place because, you see, dressed as he was with the authority of the son of Pharaoh's daughter, though he professed and supposed that they would understand that God had sent him, he was trying to exercise spiritual authority in the energy of the flesh. So they said, you better get back to where you belong. That was one reason why he didn't cut any ice. The other reason was, of course, he had the wrong friends. You don't imagine that those folks down there, his kith and kin, the Hebrews, you don't imagine they didn't know the kind of company he kept. And you please, don't imagine they didn't know why he kept that kind of company. He wanted to enjoy the pleasures of sin. For a season, mind you, just for a season. Maybe later on he'd sort of get serious about these things, but up to, you know, after all, everybody's got to live it up for a bit. And so, you see, they said, why don't you get back to where you belong? Get back to your friends. Maybe some of you have wondered why it is that in the ministry in which maybe you have already engaged, that outreach that you're called to on occasions, why you don't cut too much ice. Well, maybe you're wearing the wrong clothes. Maybe you've got the wrong friends. And the world isn't all that dumb. They'll be fully aware of the kind of company you keep. And why? You'll bear the stamp of the world. And they'll know why you bear the stamp still of the world. Maybe by the music you listen to, style of your haircut. And these are some of the last things that those whose hearts God changes are prepared to forsake. It's amazing how deep-rooted are these lifestyles. But the world, by and large, will say, if you want to live that kind of life, come and join the world. Get to where you belong. But don't make out. Wrong clothes, wrong friends, and wrong values. The treasures of Egypt. They knew where he lived. In all the luxury of a permissive society, he was reared in the palace. That was his home. They said, get back to where you belong. You're only in it for the money. If you weren't in it for the money, you'd come and live with us. You'd identify yourself with God's people. wrong clothes, wrong friends, wrong values. And of course, he lived in the wrong place. So they just said, get back to where you belong. And you see, you're not likely to cut too much ice with the world to which you say you've been called to testify of Jesus Christ if they see you still wearing the wrong clothes, with the wrong friends, with your wrong values, and living in the wrong place. They'll say you're a phony. You're just playing church. If there was any reality whatever about your profession of faith in Jesus Christ, long since you'd have begun to take him seriously. So they'd say to you, cut the cant and get back to where you belong. That's why Moses cut no ice. That's why some of you students, when you leave Bible school, have cut no ice. Because you're going back to your old clothes. At Christmas, you're going back to your old clothes. You're going back to your old friends. You're going back at Christmas even, before you come back next term, to your old values. And you're going back to the old place. You'll just set aside the Bible school mask for 2 or 3 weeks and then come back and put it on again. You know, like the veil that Moses once wore when he tried to protect his congregation from the reflected glory. You see, it isn't until you're prepared before God to rip the mask off and confess yourself to be what you are, the bankrupt that God knows you to be, that God will have the chance to get back into business in your life. And you know, Moses didn't change his clothes, he didn't change his friends, he didn't change his values, and he didn't change the place where he lived until God changed his heart. And until you let God change your heart, you won't change your clothes. You won't change your friends. You won't change your lifestyle. You won't change your values. And you'll still go and live back where you belong. Don't kid yourself. You may kid anybody else, but you won't kid God. But you will remember there was a crisis in the life of Moses that had profound, long-reaching consequences in his life. And there came a time when God said to that man, I'm going to send you to Pharaoh, and I am, by you, going to lead this people out of slavery. I'm going to accomplish that for which, by faith, your parents hid you in the bulrushes. Because by faith, they had an unshatterable conviction that God had a place for you in my plan. And I'm going to fulfill that plan now. I'm going to put substance into their faith. So I'm going to send you, and you're going to lead this people out of Egypt, out of slavery, and you're going to lead them through and on into the land of Canaan. And you remember what Moses said? He said, who am I? Who am I? That you should use me to that end. Who am I? Well, God says, that's strange. For 40 years, you strutted around telling people who you were. I'm the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Get out of my way. You spent your time telling people who you were. And now after 40 years in the backside of the desert, you don't even know who you are. Who am I? He had to find a new identity. I was talking to a man who had been 3 years in Bible school just on Friday night. He said, I knew who I was, in so many words, when I went to Bible school. I was the preacher. I was going to be the pastor. I was going to be the evangelist. I was going to make my stamp upon the world for God. But he says, what do you do when after 3 years in a theological seminary, learning Bible, you don't know whether there's any reality whatever in yourself, God, or anything? 3 years ago, I knew who I was. I was quite prepared to tell everybody. 3 years later, I don't even know who I am. God said, if you don't know who you are, now I'll tell you. You see, I'm the God of your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I'll tell you who you are. You're the seed of Abraham. And in God's timeless purpose, you were destined to enter into the good of the covenant that God made with him, saying, in your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. You know, Moses, those folks were right when they told you to get back to where you belong. Absolutely right. Get back to where you belong, Moses. But just find out first where you belong. And Moses found out where he belonged. And God then was able to do through him 40 years later what he so pathetically tried to do for God 40 years too soon. Quite frankly, have you ever really found out where you belong? Has God really changed your heart so that it becomes demonstrably obvious to the world in which you live, your friends, your fellow students, your family, your mum, your dad, your brothers and your sisters? Has it become demonstrably obvious that God's changed your heart because he's changed your clothes, your friends, your values, and the place where normally you can be found? He's changed your lifestyle. You know, something could happen in your heart between now and next term so that when you came back, your students who knew you this term wouldn't even recognize you. If he were to change your heart. Don't imagine that going to Bible school makes you a spiritual giant. More phonies come out of Bible school, more phonies come out of theological seminaries than you'd like to believe. And some of them don't even know it, because they've never, ever been at home base. What does it mean when God changes your heart? Well, these are some of the things we're going to talk about. You turn to the 12th chapter of the Epistle to the Romans. First two verses. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies. And when he says that, he means the total man, all that comprehends your humanity, body, soul, and spirit, in the totality of your being. Present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. You see, body, soul, and spirit is the tripartite nature of a man. It's comparatively easy to say you have offered your spirit to God. It's comparatively easy to say that you've offered your soul to God. But the last thing, by and large, that gets offered to God is your body. Because you see, it's in the body, really, that what happens in the soul is demonstrably obvious to the world in which you live. You see, you can make professions in your mind with your emotions and sometimes with your will, but to translate it into the tangible activity of the way you behave 24 hours a day, that's where the rub comes in. You see, the world by and large around you will only know what place Jesus Christ plays in your soul by the way you behave in your body. And if you don't behave in your body the way that you profess to honor Christ in your soul, they'll say, go back to where you belong. Present your bodies. A living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God. It's your reasonable service. It's the only smart thing to do. It's the only intelligent thing that an intelligent human being could ever do, who once at last has come intelligently to understand how an intelligent God intelligently created him. The only intelligent, obvious, reasonable thing to do is to present your body, your soul, and your spirit. And be not conformed to this world. Don't wear its clothes, don't have its friends, don't have its values, and don't live where it lives. Be not conformed to this world. But be transformed. Change your clothes, change your friends, change your values, change where you live. Huh? Or very simple. By the renewing of your mind. And the word mind there, of course, remember, speaks of disposition. It's talking about your attitude. Because that's where the transformation takes place. It takes place in the mind. I'm not talking of a mental concept. I'm not talking now of a theological proposition. I'm talking of a disposition, an attitude that you're prepared to adopt. You see, it was in the mind, in disposition, it was in attitude that things went wrong. In the first place. That's why you'll discover in the first chapter of the Epistle to the Colossians, and it puts it more succinctly in the Amplified New Testament, Colossians in chapter 1, verse 21. You at one time were estranged and alienated from God and of hostile attitude of mind. Now, this is the description given by God of the natural man. That is to say, you and I, as we by nature were born, as the fallen heirs of a fallen Adam, still dominated within the soul, which is the behavior mechanism of a man, as it's the behavior mechanism of a dog, dominated within the soul by an alien agency of satanic origin, who, as the devil himself, is hostile to every demand that God might make upon a man who was created by him to be inhabited by his creator, and by what he does and says and is in the body, he may reveal the likeness, total character, the unsullied, unblemished expression of God's perfect likeness, holiness, righteousness. But he says, you were of hostile attitude of mind. You were alienated from him. This is the condition in which all of us, without exception, were born into this world. Alienated from the life of God. Ephesians chapter 4. Alienated from the life of God. And being alienated from the life of God, something else has usurped the place that God should exercise in your humanity and mind, by nature. It's a hostile attitude of mind. And that hostile attitude of mind is demonstrated, it goes on to say at the end of this verse, by wicked works. You see, the wrong things that we do simply demonstrate a state of heart, a state of mind, an attitude, a disposition. You see, man didn't fall into sin when he ate the fruit. He ate the fruit because he'd fallen into sin. He changed his mind. He allowed Satan to introduce into human experience the same attitude that he himself had adopted towards his creator, Lucifer, son of the morning. Do you remember what he said? This is the passage that the Lord Jesus cited out of the 14th chapter of the prophecy of Isaiah when he spoke of the fall of Satan. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? Thou hast said in thine heart, by a new disposition, a new attitude towards your Creator, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High, and nobody, he said, is going to boss me around. Not even God who created me. In other words, Satan adopted an entirely new attitude, a new disposition towards his and our Creator. God's not going to boss me around. And this is exactly what Satan introduced into human experience when he said, as God said that if you don't do as he tells you, you'll die, forget it. All you've got to do is have the moral guts to kick over the traces, defy his demands, and demonstrate that you can be a man without God. Like God. Master of your own destiny, king in your own kingdom. And carve your own destiny. You go what it takes without God. That was the attitude, that was the disposition that was introduced by the devil into human experience on the day man fell. And the moment Adam believed the devil's lie that he could be a man without God, quite obviously, being now independent of God because he could be man without God, he could afford to be disobedient to God. And every act of disobedience, wicked works, simply demonstrates a hostile attitude of mind. We perpetuate the satanic fraud. By perpetuating the Adam creed of human self-sufficiency. Nobody's going to boss me around. I'll play church only insofar as it serves my best interests. I'll practice religion only insofar as I can wear my old clothes, have my old friends, cultivate and perpetuate my old values, and live in my old place. And any demand that God may make upon me that is incompatible with my old clothes, my old friends, my old values, and my old home is for the birds. A hostile attitude of mind. That's where the trouble lies. You see, you're not a liar because you tell lies. You tell lies because you're a liar. Nobody ever told a lie who wasn't a liar. Nobody is an adulterer by committing adultery. It's only adulterers who commit adultery. Nobody ever became a thief by stealing. It's only thieves who steal. You don't become dirty by living in the dirt. You live in the dirt because you're dirty. A pig isn't a pig because it wallows in the mud. It wallows in the mud because it's a pig. Don't kid yourself. What you do demonstrates demonstrably what you are. And when you seek out the kind of company that do the things that you do because of what you are, you demonstrate by the choice of the friends you make the kind of person that you are because they'll do the things you do. That's why you avoid the company of those who won't. It embarrasses you. This is what the Bible calls the carnal mind. It's hostile. It repudiates the rightful and legitimate claims of a creator upon his creature. is resentful of every demand that a holy God makes of a man who was created by him to reveal God's holiness. Look at Romans 8. And here, this hostile attitude of mind is defined and enlarged upon. Verse 5, Romans 8. Those who are according to the flesh, this hostile attitude of mind, this disposition that resents God's claims upon you as his creature, those who are according to the flesh and controlled by its unholy desires set their minds on and pursue those things which gratify the flesh. If you adopt that hostile attitude towards God that resents the suggestion that you, having been made in his likeness, should be as holy as he is and as perfect as your Father in heaven, if you're dominated by that attitude, you will seek only those things that gratify its unholy appetites. The mind of the flesh, verse 6, sense and reason without the Holy Spirit. In other words, a man destitute of that life for which he was created, alienated from the life of God, just the animal part of him surviving, a body and a soul, but a body and a soul dominated and under the jurisdiction of an alien agency hostile to God's demands in righteousness, a principle that can only abuse, misuse, and prostitute that man's humanity. The mind of the flesh, this hostile attitude towards God, sense and reason of a man without God, that is death. That's what happened when Adam fell into sin. He believed the devil's lie that you can live it up without God and get by. He died. Spiritually. He still had a body, of course, in which he could become an alcoholic. He still had a body in which he could go high on drugs. He still had a body in which he could commit adultery. He still had a body in which he could gorge himself like the glutton he is. He still had a mind, emotion, and will. A mind that could be polluted, and emotions that could be polluted, and a will that could be polluted. He still had a body and a soul. But without the Holy Spirit. And of course, as all of you know, having been created uniquely as man, so that God in man might be the origin of his own image and the source of his own activity, dynamic of his own demands, and at all times in man, God himself the cause of his own effect, he wasn't protected as the animal kingdom has been by instinct. So not having been protected by instinct, as I've told some of you on many occasions before, he couldn't behave like an animal. And being alienated now from the life of God, he didn't have what it takes to behave like a man. So he behaves like a maniac. That's why you should never talk of a man behaving like an animal, because the animal kingdom doesn't deserve that kind of an insult. Did you ever see an alcoholic horse? There's no horse that stupid that would lie and wallow in its own vomit. A horse would be ashamed. Ever seen a drug-addicted dog that'll shoot its brains with hard acid? Or prey upon its fellow dogs and push the stuff to get a bone? No, it takes American teenagers to do that, and high school students, and college graduates. The budding leadership of a great nation, the greatest in the world. They're the kind of people that lie in their own vomit. They're the kind of people who push drugs. They're the kind of people who've already thrown out of the window all those family ties that long since were the heart of a nation. Don't blame the animal kingdom. That's man without God. That's the carnal mind. The mind of the flesh, verse 7 of that chapter, with its carnal thoughts and purposes, is hostile to God, gets hot round the collar, resents this old-fashioned stuff as though I had to behave as though I was decent. When everybody else is behaving in their debauched way in a permissive society where the old taboos of the past long since have been thrown out of the window. It does not submit itself to God's law. Indeed, it cannot. It's contrary to its own nature, because this carnal mind derives from the devil himself, who said, I'm going to be like God. I'm going to dethrone him, and he's not going to boss me around. All right, when you want to behave like that, quite obviously, the world that belongs to that ilk says, get back to where you belong, but don't preach. Keep your mouth shut if you want to pretend you're a Christian. If you're a pig, get back to your mud. Live where you belong. That's what happened to Judas Iscariot. We're told in the last part of the Acts, first chapter, he went to his own place, who by transgression fell. He went to his own place, went where he belonged. You see, we shouldn't really have the Epistle of Paul to the Romans. We shouldn't really have the Epistle of Paul to the Thessalonians. Or Colossians. It should have been the epistle of Judas Iscariot to the Romans.